This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
Listening to Catholic Weekend, episode number 245 for the week ending Saturday, November 1st, 2014. All Saints Day. Good morning. I am Jeff Nielsen in Roswell, Georgia.
I'm your captain.
I'm also your captain.
I'm your captain.
And with me today from Conyers, Georgia, Maria Johnson.
Hey there. Hi, everybody. So happy to be here.
So happy to have you with us today. And from Oklahoma, Steve Nelson.
Come sweeping down the plain.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. The waving glad to be here from a very frigid Oklahoma.
Frigid it is in lots of places. And, oh, I'm not going to do it. From Buckhead, Atlanta. Sarah Fabulous.
Hello, everybody. It's cold.
It is. A little chilly outside. And also joining us from Malta, Montana, where they have some rodeos.
There's a rodeo.
Father Corey Stika.
And, you know, I'm sitting here wondering what cold in Atlanta feels like. Below 60?
Yeah, it's like 70, I think. No, it's less than that, actually. It was in the 30s this morning.
Oh, do you mean it was below freezing? Then yes.
Right, and now it's 45.
Oh, we call that balmy.
All right, we have one more person on our panel this morning, our special guest. And let me play his music here. And wow, talk about significant. Well, he's from New Orleans. And so the Saints music playing in the background, of course. And then it's also All Saints Day. So anyway, we have Jeff Young with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay.
And the Saints are here. I mean, that's awesome. All Saints,
well,
Saints Day.
And
we have Saints here in New Orleans. I mean, not the football team. I'm just talking about, like, saintly, like, Saints, you know?
Okay.
Mother Catherine Drexel has a connection here, and, you know, we've got some Saints.
Let's just keep on listening to Jeff just dig himself into a big giant hole. Come on, Jeff. Keep going.
Well, welcome to the Catholic Weekend drinking game. Every time you're going
to sing. Wait a minute. I think it might be time for... No. There we go.
Let's just get out of the way right away.
30 seconds.
Here we go. Yes, it's the Catholic Weekend train wreck. Welcome, everybody. And as I just said in the opening, that I guess we're still on the opening here. It is Saints Day, All Saints Day, November 1st, 2014. And so I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about that on today's show. And I just thought of something. Oh, well, I'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Well, no, it's kind of a monumental thing when I actually think of something. So anyway, hello, everybody. Welcome to Catholic Weekend. Jeff Young, what have you been up to lately?
Well, there's a lot of saints here.
No, where?
Oh, goodness. I've been up to a lot. You know, I have a book coming out. I'm still trying to wake up, by the way.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I do have a book coming out. And Sarah Fabulous is in that book, too.
Really?
Yeah.
What is she doing in that darn book?
She has actually got a recipe for a homebrew specially made just for this Catholic foodie around the table. It's called Around the Table, the Catholic Foodie Middle Eastern Cuisine. And it's all, I think, about 76 recipes, I think, total, Middle Eastern food. And Sarah came up with a recipe for a beer that will complement a lot of those dishes.
Nice. Food meets.
And let me tell you, I've had that beer a couple of times, and yes. Mm. When are you coming over again with another beer?
Well, let me
tell you. It's nice. It's got like a lemony, it's awesome.
Sarah, tell us what makes it unique.
So there's lemon and mint in the beer. So you get the lemon is definitely on the back end, but on the front end you get the freshness of the mint. And so it's just a really nice fresh beer that I came up with the recipe because I thought it would be great with the flavors that work with Mediterranean cuisine. Mm. So Jeff Young and I had a Skype call to talk about all the flavors that he has in some of his recipes. And so he listed off some of the most popular ingredients. And so from there, I built a recipe for a beer and I made it and it came out perfect. So I said, all right, round one, check.
You're just a natural.
What you're saying is there's no hummus in this beer, right?
No hummus. I don't know how chickpeas would do in a beer.
I just want to be clear about that because, you know, I have this thing about hummus.
Well,
and it's cooked with hummus.
Could you hummus a few bars of that? So let me read what it says here on Amazon for Around the Table with the Catholic Foodie, Middle Eastern Cuisine, Food Meets Faith in the Holy Land. Jeff Young, better known as the Catholic Foodie, takes readers along on his recent pilgrimage to the Holy Land for a unique and savory experience of both faith and food. In addition to 60 original recipes, he includes stories about the history of Middle Eastern cuisine and the faith experiences you can only have in the kitchen and around the table with Sarah Vabulous, the Catholic drinky. No, I added that last part.
Yeah, you did add that last part.
So it's going to be released when, Mr. Young?
I think it's the 11th is the date that it'll arrive from the press, you know.
Yeah, it says right now it's temporarily out of stock already. So
yeah, it was listed on Amazon as being available November, I guess November 1st, mm-hmm. and it'll be available on the 11th. So pre-orders, I mean, you can certainly pre-order the book there. It's also available at Liguori, at their website, liguori.org. And Aquinas & More has it. I'm sure it'll be in stock in like Barnes & Noble.
How about your local Catholic bookstore?
Catholic bookstores, that's okay. Right.
And then if none of the above works for you, then you can always go over to sqpn.com and click on the amazon.com banner, and then you can order it directly through there, and that'll help out SQPN.
Or you can just drive down to New Orleans, visit all the saints we have, and I'll sign one for you.
Okay. That's another option. So we'll go ahead and print his address in the show notes, along with his personal telephone number for crank calls.
Oh yeah,
and uninvited visits. There we go. I need more coffee.
Mm. Well, Steve, what do you think your favorite recipe in the book is?
Oh wow, I don't know. I mean, yeah, putting this together, it was a lot of work, and I mean, I loved it. It was In a way, it was surprising, right? The whole process was surprising. I always thought that writing, the actual writing part, would be the difficult part. But it was actually the easiest part. You know, the hard part is writing out the recipes, you know, doing recipe testing, doing all the cooking, writing out the recipes, knowing that they work, first of all. Excuse me. And then putting them in a way, in a format that makes sense to people. And that was a lot of work in itself. All the photography I did, matter of fact, that all the photography in the book, except for my professional shots that they wanted to do of me as an author, were shot with my iPhone 5S.
Oh, so wow.
All the photography in the book was done by me. And so it was a tremendous amount of work. And looking back, it was the stories were the easy part. I kept thinking, no, the writing was going to be hard, but it wasn't. That was the easy part. It was the recipes that were the hard part. And I couldn't have done it. I had the best recipe testers in the world. My kids were always there to help however they could, and sometimes fighting over who gets to taste it first, and which is what siblings are supposed to do. And my wife was, you know, I kind of joked about this a few weeks back at CatholicFoodie.com on the blog that once the book comes out, I'll have to start sharing stories of, you know, the behind the scenes, like the knockdown, drag out fights and all those things that happen in the background. Because, you know, when you see the book and you see all the fun, nice, pretty stuff up front, you don't realize like the pain, the heartache, the anguish, the, you know, the blood, sweat and tears and the knockdown, drag out fights that happen in the background, you know. And but it's all beautiful, and it all works out. And we're thrilled. I'm thrilled. My family's thrilled that this is something that's going to be out there available to inspire people and encourage people to get back into the kitchen and around the table. Because it really isn't about the food. It's about the relationships. It's about those shared meals. It's about coming together.
About those
and
fights.
Really experiencing the domestic church, right? I mean, that's what the family is. So I'm excited. Can't wait to actually hold it in my own hands. It'll be kind of it's going to be really fun, really, really cool, but also kind of weird. You know, like, wow, this is me, you know.
Let's... Hey Jeff, you know, one of the things I really enjoyed following you around on your trip when you were in all of those exciting places. I can't name one specifically right off the bat, but I recall one of the stories that you were telling was when you were fishing in the Sea of Galilee.
Well, we went on a boat ride. It was more of a tour thing. It was a tour deal, you know, so you're on this boat, and the boats look as if they're kind of older, ancient boats, but you're on the Sea of Galilee, and you're right there, not too far from Nazareth. Matter of fact, we had mass that same day on the Mount of Beatitudes outside. It was outside. You have this beautiful, I mean, it's the hills, and then from the hills, you can look down and see the Sea of Galilee. It was a magical, beautiful day. Mm-hmm. I mean, from being out there on the water to that mass outdoors, and then getting to see the church itself, the Church of the Beatitudes, just a beautiful, beautiful day. And the thing that was so special to me about that day is that it kind of encompassed everything. You know, you're out there on the water. You kind of see where the food came from, right? The fishermen. And the life of a fisherman back then was, it wasn't a cakewalk. I mean, it was a lot of hard work. And they made very little money for what they put into it. And we actually ended that morning with a lunch, a special lunch at this restaurant that was right down the road, kind of a high-end, high upscale restaurant, where the chef... One of the chef is incorporating his own Lebanese heritage, which was unique to the area, because he's serving traditional Galilee style food with a distinctly Lebanese characteristic. And it's unique because all across the Middle East, if you ask any of those people in those countries, it's kind of understood that the best kitchen among all those different countries is the Lebanese kitchen. They've kind of, in a sense, they're seen as the ones who have perfected this culinary art of Middle Eastern cuisine. And so I got to meet the chefs. I got to go in the back and cook with them. And guess what we were making? We were making St. Peter's fish in a traditional fashion, which is the whole fish, not filet, right? It's the whole fish. And they were caught that day in the Sea of Galilee. They were caught that morning. And so it's just such a beautiful thing. And then to share that meal around the table with all the pilgrims, it was just God's presence from that morning all the way through. It was a beautiful, beautiful day.
Now I'm getting hungry to go back to the Holy Land.
Yeah.
Did the fish have eyeballs?
Yeah, it did. And actually, it was funny because a couple of the folks on the trip, on the pilgrimage, had never had a whole fish before. And so that was the first thing they said was, this fish is staring at me.
Yeah.
Did you pierce the eyeball and eat it in front of them?
No, oh, I didn't. But I know that if my son had been there, he probably would have done that.
Oh. Yeah, it's tasty. It's a delicacy.
Mm-hmm. No thanks. No fish eyeballs. No.
Hey, Jeff, when you were over there, were you keeping this whole book thing in mind when you were doing the pilgrimage, or was that something that you thought of after the fact?
Well, no. Actually, the book kind of factored into the whole thing because it was about a year ago. Well, it was before a year ago. It was the spring of 2012, maybe March, April 2013, I'm sorry, where Select International Tours approached me about leading a trip to Israel, to the Holy Land. And I said, sure, I'd love to. And so it was scheduled for the February 2014. And somewhere around, I think, December is when Liguori contacted me and said, hey, we hear you're doing this trip. We've been following you on CatholicFoodie.com. We love all the stuff that you do. And would you be interested in writing a book? You know, cookbook about the trip and maybe incorporating stories. We know your wife is Lebanese because I write about that on you know, CatholicFoodie.com. And I said, sure, I'd love to. And so the whole thrust of going, the trip itself became intertwined with the whole book experience from the very beginning. And so I took tons of pictures. I had other people in the group taking pictures with an eye towards, will this be usable in the book? I was trying to take notes along the way to make sure I remembered everything that I would need to remember for the book.
Excellent. Well, you probably hear the music coming up in the background. And that means it's time for our first break. And we're going to talk more with Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie, and his new book after this break. So let's see. November 1st, All Saints Day, some other big day as well. Oh, I know what it is. Today is the first day of SQPN.com's, or SQPN without the .com. Fund or campaign. What do we call it? Giving campaign? Fund drive? Maria wants to say something about it right now.
I have nothing to say.
she's laughing at me. And so I figured, well, I'm going to throw it to her. So
you know what? I can't do this.
Okay.
I can't.
All right. Well, I'll turn you off then. As I do most women. Okay. So the fun drive is just cranking up today. Our official start right now is today. And if you'd like to help out SQPN with our programming, our mission for new evangelization through podcasting, and you can head over to sqpn.com/donate if you want to go right to the page, or you can just go to our main page and look at the top menu bar there, and you can see how you can help us with our giving campaign. And you can give just a small amount per month, or if you have more money and you want to give more money per month, that's fine too, or one-time gifts are always welcomed. And many, many ways to help us out, including by using Amazon.com for your gift buying. That helps us out. Boy, I'm just really tubing this thing today, aren't I? I should probably have some notes in front of me to refer to in the future. Anyway, head over to Amazon.com. But before you do that, SQPN.com, click on the link. And everybody's snickering at me in the background. I can hear you. It's not funny.
Oh, it's hilarious.
I guess it is. Anyway. So, anyway. Okay, here we go. Today is the first day of the SQPN giving campaign. Please head over to SQPN.com and donate your money. Thank you. All right. Now, we'll listen to Al Marchand and this song. Okay, he's not going to end it right away. Okay, there we go. Thank you, Al Marchand, Puxatami Phil, and I think this would be a good time to play this. Now, if anybody on my panel of guest hosts would like to help out in any way, please jump in.
No, because watching you flounder is just glorious.
I see the tie. Flounder, the fish, and...
Blend. Yeah. Good segue right back into that awesome conversation. So how was the fish? Was it tasty? I mean, I know the whole experience was magnificent, but...
Well, I mean, it was one of the best meals I've ever had in my life. And I think that was because of the experience, you know. But, I mean, it was – I mean, the restaurant was called – it's called Magdalena, and named after Mary Magdalene. Mm. And beautiful because it's owned by a Christian family. And very important when you're talking about the Holy Land to make a few distinctions. We don't think about this, I think. We're not used to thinking about it this way in the States. But, you know, Christians in the Holy Land are a minority. Mm. And a matter of fact, when they refer to the majority of them are either Catholic or Orthodox. There are other Protestants, you know, there are Protestants there too, but for the most part, the biggest populations would be Catholic and Orthodox. And when I say Catholic, I mean not only Catholic, but also the other Eastern rites of the church, whether it's Maronites or Melkites or whatever it may be. And so in order, when you have a minority like that, right, Christians, they're wanting to do everything they can to unite themselves, especially in front of the opposing, if you will, opposing or other religions. And so the majority of the religion or the majority of the population are either Jewish or Muslim. And so for them, they don't say, oh, I'm Catholic, oh, I'm Melkite or Maronite or Orthodox. They say, I'm Christian. And so it brings all of them together. They're all Christians. And they really are, the Christians really are a minority. And so Select International Tours is really good about this. They want to support as much as they can Christian families. And to do that, they try to use only Christian vendors who are there. We stop at different stores or shops along the way, restaurants that we go to. They're all owned by Christian families. And we're doing that because if we don't support them, then we stand a very great chance of having no Christian presence in the Holy Land, and that's a frightening thing. You can look over the last 30 to 45 years and see a massive exodus of the Christians from the Holy Land simply because they can't find work to support their family. Of course, you have issues with unrest, right, and sometimes even violence. Like we've seen just a few months back between Israel and Palestine. And so we do everything that we can to try to support those Christian families. One of the great lessons I learned on this trip is this. I've always thought of the Holy Land as being holy because that's where Jesus was born, that's where he lived, that's where he walked, he preached, he in a sense launched the kingdom of God there on earth. And so that's why it's holy. And that's true, but what I learned is that the Holy Land is holy because today Jesus is present in the baptized Christians who live there and who are maintaining these sites. They're maintaining this presence. They have a presence there that if they weren't there, there would be no Christian presence in the Holy Land. That, I think, is an amazing thought to think. And I say amazing as in not necessarily in a good sense, you know. It's frightening to me that there would be no Christian presence in the Holy Land. So We try to do everything we can. The restaurant we went to, Magdalena, owned by a Christian family. The chef there, Chef Joseph Hanna, is very well spoken of, very well written about all throughout the Holy Land, both Israel and Palestine. And one of the chefs that work along with him, Chef Ahmad, has his own TV show. You know, food show there, which is really neat. And I was cooking them, you know, next to these two guys. I was in heaven, you know. This is fantastic. But in addition to that, I mean, the food was exquisite. The presentation was exquisite. Some of the pictures from that dinner actually will be in the book. The fattoush salad, you know, fattoush, a lot of folks, there's certain dishes, Middle Eastern dishes, that people here in the States recognize readily. Hummus is one of them. Kibbeh. Like the little football-looking things, the fried kibbeh, a lot of people recognize that. A fattoush salad is one of those things where you have what looks like a basic Middle Eastern salad, but it has pieces of toasted pita bread in it, okay? That makes it unique. Well, at the restaurant, they didn't use the toasted pita bread. They actually cut the pita into strips and then fried it, like flash fried it, and then it topped the salad. Strikingly beautiful when it came to the table. I took a picture of that. It's one of my favorite pictures I think I've ever taken.
Man, that sounds better than croutons, right?
Oh, it was. And you know, it's homemade. They make it themselves, the pita bread, so it's not stuff you're getting from, let's say, Cisco or, you know, some big supplier. It's right there in-house. Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing that struck me, I had the opportunity during seminary to live in the Holy Land for 2.5 months, which was fantastic. Wow. It was amazing. We lived in Jerusalem for a month, in Bethlehem for a month, and then traveled around the rest of the country. Actually, it was 3 months. I was just looking at my passport. It was 3 months. And the way they present the food as an American really struck me. Because we're used to, you know, you go to a restaurant, you know, you go to Applebee's or wherever you go to eat and you order your meals and they bring them out plated. But why don't you talk about how they do it over there?
I mean, there's a big difference. And it's interesting because I think I've mentioned here just a little while ago, my wife is Lebanese. And so there's a lot. I mean, her family, her grandfather came over from Lebanon in the late 1800s, so it's really close to like 1900, like 1890-something, you know. And of course, back then, everything was geared towards trying to blend in, right? The great melting pot of America. We all wanted to blend in. But ethnic groups across the board a lot of times try to hold on to certain aspects of their own culture. And usually it's food, music, language. Some of the words they'll keep, and usually it's the bad words, by the way. You can see that across. It doesn't matter what ethnicity we're talking about. There's usually the bad words. It's the things they don't want other people to know they're talking about. So they try to hold on to that. And, of course, with the food in my wife's family, a lot of it is they do the same way that they do today still in the Holy Land, the Middle East. And we have appetizers. You go out to a restaurant, then typically you're going to have an appetizer. And the appetizer course is typically pretty cut and dry. It's pretty fast. I mean, it's there just to give you something to nibble on before the entree comes. And it's not something that's going to take a lot of time. But the mezze, right, the Middle Eastern mezze is different. Mm. It's kind of like appetizers, but it's long and drawn out. And meals are an event. And I guess I can share more about that soon.
Jeff's a radio guy. He's good at picking up the musical cues in the background. That is the U.S. Air Force Airman of Note coming on in the background. And the appropriately named title, Sleaze something. What's it called? Sleaze Factor. That's it. I like it, though. So this is our bottom of the hour break. This show is going by so darn fast. I can't believe it. So, don't forget about SQPN and your annual giving. Again, this is our annual campaign for getting support for SQPN. And some of you may wonder what in the heck it is you guys do with all the money. Well, we have a lot of costs supporting the website, supporting all the media files, all the different shows that we have. We actually have a part-time employee, and we have other expenses as well. So it's not free. It's free to you, of course, to watch our shows, but it's not free for us to do all the production of this. And most of us do it for free. We volunteer to do this work because we believe in it. We believe in the mission of SQPN, which is to evangelize in our own way by attracting as many people as possible to using popular culture to attract people to see that, hey, you know, Catholics are cool people too, and we are happy people for the most part, and we have a message, a reason for our happiness, right? So, again, if you're into helping us, please head over to sqpn.com/donate. You can also sponsor a show if you want. You want to sponsor an episode of Catholic Weekend or an episode of Father's the Break or Geek Week or any of the great SQPN-produced shows, you can head over to, again, sqpn.com, click on the Donate button, and you'll see the item there to sponsor a show. And it's affordable. If you have a book that you want to sell or promote, if you have a somebody's special occasion that you want to commemorate for, you know, donating a show, that's all those are great uses for that. So head over to sqpn.com/donate. Now, I mentioned amazon.com is a great way to help us out as well. When you purchase an item, we get a portion of that purchase, and it adds up little bit by little bit. It really does add up. And also, we are partnered with web hosting service called Bluehost.com. Sarah is using their service. Sarah, what would you like to say about Bluehost?
I really like Bluehost. I think they do a great job hosting my website, and it was really super easy to implement. You know, I moved over from a friend's independent server and migrated everything, and it was super easy. So if you have an existing website, easy to move everything over. Also, if you want to start new websites on there, really easy. I mean, they give you unlimited websites that you can build on your domain, which I think is really awesome and a unique thing for a web host service.
And do they give you the URL if you sign up for like a year or something like that?
Yeah, you'd get one free URL for use, I guess it's good for a year or whatever, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome. So
excellent. And I guess, Steve, you could also echo the same accolades for Bluehost.
Yeah, you know, Bluehost is the first service I use to implement WordPress blogs. And I've never had a problem. I've never had any significant downtime. I've never had any real problem. And in the couple of occasions where there were some outages, they let me know in advance that they were doing service. And or if there was a problem, they let me know that they were working on it. And I've just I haven't had any complaints about them. I like using them.
Excellent. I hear their customer service is excellent. So. Yeah. Well, anyway, so if you're thinking about starting a new blog or a new podcast or whatever, head over to sqpn.com/Bluehost. There we go. Bottom of the hour. We're back. And so, you know what? I'm thinking maybe we should play this and see what you think about this.
Working in the lab late one night, when my eyes beheld an eerie sight.
Why am I not surprised?
Well, you know what? You're really missing a lot because we'll have a link to this in the show notes. This is the Jib Jab that actually we talked about last week, where Maria, you did this, didn't you? The Jib Jab video of all of us dancing around.
I did. Steve gave me garbage for making him Frankenstein.
Steve. I'm the tall guy.
Why do I always have to be the tall guy?
Well, Miss Maria is the actual Frankenstein the bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Because of my gray streaks.
Yeah, I love it.
We have it going on.
So anyway, that was something
I would look like J. Jonah Jameson if I was a guy.
we had some fun with that a couple years ago, I guess. And then I think also last week we played, I'm not going to play it again, the Catholic Weekend Kooks. We had some fun with that as well. You missed it, Steve.
I did. Yeah. Sorry, folks.
Anyway, so, you know, we're talking about, you know, Halloween, All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day, etc. And saw this, thank you, Lynn Francisco, this article in the National Catholic Register about ghosts and the Catholic Church, pointing to the permanence of the soul. And this was written by Thomas MacDonald, again, on the National Catholic Register. And so basically he talks about the fact that, you know, what does the Catholic Church have to say about ghosts? And it's a really interesting article. Again, we'll have the link to that in the show notes. But essentially, in the early church, it seemed that the fathers of the church were basically saying, well, anytime you see a ghost, it's not really the souls. It's a manifestation by demons and not, you know, really the souls of the people that they're purporting to be. And then as time went on, as so many things happened in the church with development of doctrine, in later times, well, Augustine didn't believe you want to get that, please? Augustine didn't believe in the presence of ghosts either. He thought that they were also demonic appearances, etc. But then later in the development of doctrine, St. Thomas Aquinas said basically that, well, you know, there might be actually some evidence that these are maybe the souls of the folks in purgatory, and then, you know. So what do you all think? Okay, we'll move on to the next subject. No.
You know, I think what's kind of striking is the church really has never said, yes, there are ghosts, no, there aren't ghosts, or, you know, what ghosts are, you know, are they really, you know, the souls of those in purgatory, like you mentioned, are they the souls of the damned? You know, some people want to throw that out as a theory. Are they the soul, you know, are they, you know, kind of like a bleeding through where we can see heaven? You know, the church has really never said, and wisely so, because you can even argue whether or not that is, they are souls, you know, could also be some kind of scientific, you know, natural phenomenon that we just don't understand. And I think that's kind of the wisdom of the church, is unless there's an absolute reason to define it, she doesn't.
And that's probably good policy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, I was just thinking about, I don't know, 2 months or so, I stayed at this hotel in northern New Mexico called the St. James. It was built in the 1870s, and it apparently had a lot of famous lawmen and gunslingers like Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid and other people that had stayed there. people had been killed in some of the hotel rooms and things over the over. And so they tend to, publicize, market, whatever, this, the fact that the hotel is haunted, you know. And, you know, they'll say things like, oh, if you walk upstairs at night, you'll feel a presence, or you'll smell roses, or you'll something like that. And, I didn't really buy into it, because I figured it was, they were just sort of setting you up for your own mind games. Because I've never really experienced anything where I thought that there was a presence there that I couldn't see or anything like that. So I'm skeptical of the whole ghost thing myself.
Well, he ends his article by saying, despite an extensive body of literature concerning the unquiet dead, the church has never pronounced definitively on the subject, as Father Corey said. There is, of course, the acknowledgement that the saints may visit the living for their betterment, that God may allow angels and saints and even the souls of the dead to appear to the living if he so wills it, and that in the communion of saints we are all united in a single church, both visible and invisible. So, again, if you
will. Can I add to what I said a minute ago?
Sure.
I've been in situations like in Rome, like at St. Paul's Outside the Wall and other things, where I felt maybe a saintly presence, but I would never have called them a ghost.
Right.
You know, to me, I'm thinking, you know, I guess of a ghost as a human figure moving around or something.
I think of Casper.
Other than a comforting presence of something. So to me, there's a distinction.
Mm-hmm.
But an apparition is a ghost, isn't it? I'm just saying.
I mean,
if it's in the appearance of something. I mean, I think it's semantics. A lot of people can get caught up in like, I totally think what you said earlier, that why wouldn't an angel appear to us, or why couldn't some other saintly person come and visit us?
And I think that they must have believed in ghosts even back in the days of the apostles, because when Jesus reappeared, when he was reincarnated, many of them thought that he was some kind of a ghost. And he said, that's why he said, you know, touch me. No, I'm not a ghost. Well, he didn't say that, but, you know, I'm real. And so
I guess I just have a different definition of what a ghost would be.
Yeah. I'm thinking of like Ghostbusters.
I think I once saw a ghost.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so my college, St. Mary's up at Notre Dame, is haunted in a couple of different areas. There's a ghost of a man who walks around in a top hat, like in a suit and a top hat. And I was there, I spent fall break there 1 year. I didn't want to come home and because I was going to New York for the Notre Dame Navy game. And so I just wanted to have the week to work on my senior thesis and all this. And so I was just in the dorm, very few people around, and I look up out my window to hallway that's above, across the way, across the building, and definitely saw this figure in a top hat walk by. And there was nobody up there. I mean, it's dark. It was dark outside, but you could see the lights. And it's one of those ghosts that haunts that hallway. And then also, this is really creepy.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking John Cleese in Harry Potter movies.
Whatever.
I was thinking of Abraham Lincoln.
And then there was one part of one of the dorms called Queen's Court. And so this was where allegedly some girl like committed suicide, and she haunts the hall there. Well, one of my friends was the RA in that part of the dorm, and everyone had moved out. Most traditionally freshmen live in there, so freshmen move out on move out day, and so we stayed for senior week because we were seniors getting ready for graduation. And so she went and she unlocked all the doors so they could do an inspection on the rooms to see, you know, if there was any damage done, what needs to be fixed, da da da. Well, we unlocked all the doors. We left for a little while, come back, all the doors are locked. There's not a lot of people on campus, and it was no one else's job to be around there locking doors. And this happened multiple times. We'd unlock the doors again. We'd come back half an hour later, they'd all be locked again. So, yeah, I definitely think that this could happen.
I hate to say it, that last story sounds like a really, really good prank.
No, because only certain people have keys for different areas. So it was her or the director of Res Life who was busy doing other stuff. So not happening.
No. Did you see any little green men too?
Yeah, shut up. You people shut up.
Now, you know, I've talked about my experience with, I don't know if you call it an apparition if you don't actually see it, but, you know, like having that strong smell of roses in one instance in my life, and another when a man came up to me, a homeless man came up to me and called me by my name and asked me for the exact amount of money that I had in my pocket. And so I really believe that, I don't know, maybe that's an angel, but you know, that's maybe, yeah, maybe that's different than
a ghost. Okay, that's the kind of stuff that would totally creep me out. Cause I had the rose thing happen with my son. You know, that in Conyers, there's this unapproved, pretty much silenced apparition site, or I think I met the woman, and I think maybe she was a little.
It was quiet. In connection with that, you know, because the lady that was showing me the pictures of that whole thing, because she was one of those who went to all those apparitions, and she had these photos, and she was showing them to Linda, and I'm kind of above them looking at all this stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, it's a bunch of hogwash. It looks like double exposures, and I just, you know, I think the reason why I got that strong, potent perfume of roses is that I didn't believe. I was very skeptical, and nobody else smelled it. I looked around. I still remember looking down at them and go, "Is one of you wearing rose perfume?" And they looked up at me and they went, "No." And I said, "Don't you smell that? I mean, that strong, you know, potent rose smell." And they both smiled, so they knew what I was experiencing.
Oh, Jeffy, bless you.
Well,
that happened to my son because we were in actually one of the barns on that site. I'd taken John's cousin to go visit, and it was probably one of the coldest days in Atlanta in a long, long time. And so Jonathan was very small. He was about 4 or 5. And the big kids were outside playing, and her sons were outside playing with my girls. But I kept Jonathan with me because he was just small, and it was too cold. So he's kind of following me around like, you know, oh, Mom, you know. Mm-hmm. And we were in a stuffy barn that smelled like dust, and it had been abandoned. And he's like, ew, it really stinks in here. That lady's wearing too much perfume. And I'm like, she's not wearing any perfume. And he goes, it smells like flowers. Gross. Blech. And he's being a 5-year-old boy. and I'm like, no, honey, there's no, you're nuts. And then the woman gets freaked out, and she starts questioning Jonathan. And that's when I said, no, leave the boy alone. Whatever is happening to you in your head, you're not going to share this with my son. So thank you very much. And I got out of there. But after that, I really thought about it. And then I interrogated him. But I'm his mother. I can't
leave that poor boy alone.
So that was kind of weird.
Now, no one has said anything yet about the possibility of souls from purgatory coming back and asking for prayers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah. You know, it's, and I think you do have to make a legitimate separation between what people consider ghosts, what you see on Ghost Hunters and things like that, and actual apparitions. You know, appearances of Our Lord, appearances of Our Lady, things like the souls in purgatory coming back, because that is well known in the tradition of the church and the history of the church, that they have come back to family members and those close to them and ask for those prayers. They've come to saints. There are certain different saints. I think Padre Pio is one of them, as I recall off the top of my head, who had that experience where he would regularly have souls from purgatory coming and asking for prayers. I mean, that is a very much a legitimate thing. Mainly, I'm a little more skeptical about some of the more ghost hunter type stuff, but you know, very much apparitions are a real thing in the history of church, and there are a number of them that are approved.
Yeah, I think I have that same distinction. You know, the apparitions and things like that, certainly I believe in those, but the, you know, souls or ghosts wandering around haunted mansions and things, I'm skeptical of those kind of things.
Well, I kind of laugh because when I was in the Air Force, I had a friend who was really into, you know, the paranormal. And he would go to the cemeteries around the area and take pictures at middle of the night with a flash. And, of course, every picture would have the big orbs
all over. And, oh, yeah, that's the ghost. That's the ghost. And I'm like, you're outdoors at a cemetery at night with a flash. It's dust right in front of the camera being illuminated by the flash. You know, this is not a ghost. I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you.
Dust ghosts.
Yeah. Dust ghosts.
If I come back as a ghost, I don't want to be an orb. I want to be like a, I don't know, a square or a triangle.
I want to be Slimer from Ghostbusters.
I want to slime people and make sure they knew I was there.
Yeah.
Well, I hear Alan Marchand's band coming up in the background again, this time Llewellyn's Leap. And this is our last break. Can you believe it? It's just about time for our picks of the week and the end of the show. So, again, thank you for watching and supporting SQPN, all of you from all these years. And we really do appreciate it, and we hope that you continue your support. And if you're new out there, just listening, just finding out about SQPN and our wonderful shows, and you feel like supporting us, please do. Head over to sqpn.com/donate and click on the appropriate button for the amount of money you want to pledge per month. And if you want to give a one-time donation, that is welcomed as well. So again, thank you very much for your support, your prayers, especially in this next couple month period here where we try to raise money so we can continue operating through 2015. All right. I'm going to go ahead and cut that short. So I think we're going to need all the time possible to cover our picks of the week and our plugging of podcasts and blogs and that kind of thing. But before I do, I just wanted to remind everybody that this, starting tomorrow, is National Vocation Awareness Week. And the Bishop of Raleigh put out a little video. And I'm not going to be able to play it because now I have to take down this volume here, a little technical thing. Okay, here we go. Let's listen to Bishop, I think, Burbage or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he says his name. Let's see.
This year, National Vocation Awareness Week is November 2nd to the 8th. This is a wonderful opportunity for the church in our country, especially in dioceses, parishes, and schools, to promote vocations through prayer and education. Our Holy Father, Pope Francis, has said that wherever there is life, fervor, and a desire to bring Christ to others, genuine vocations will arise. This is particularly true if a community prays insistently for vocations and courageously proposes to its young people the path for special consecration. I ask you to help celebrate National Vocation Awareness Week this year by committing to pray for vocations and perhaps inviting someone you know who has the necessary qualities and gifts to consider a vocation to the priesthood or religious life. The harvest is abundant, but laborers are few. May the Lord continue to raise up from within His church people willing to say yes to His call to the priesthood and religious life.
The grace to say yes. Right? Thank you. And that's a very young-looking bishop, by the way.
That's a nice little
one. One of the younger ones in the country, as I recall.
Yeah. So Lynn probably appreciated that. That's her bishop in the Diocese of Raleigh. Okay. Well, you know what that means. It is now time for
the picks of the week.
The picks of the week. Week. All right. Well, who wants to start this week's picks of the week?
You know, since we are, sometimes it's so hard for us to come up with this. Every once in a while, I think it's the picks of the week, W-E-A-K.
Thanks. Now that's, I'm only going to remember it now, the picks of the week, W-E-A-K.
I have a great pick that kind of follows up on on that beautiful statement. Actually, it's Pat Gohn's Among Women episode number 186. It's called On Faith, Grace, and Prayer in Marriage and Family Life. And I had read something earlier this week, and I wish I had saved it, and I really didn't intend to keep it as a pick of the week, but it was a study that came out that showed that something like 82% of the kids who stay faithful to the faith after high school and into the college years do so not because of the influences of their CCD teachers or other leaders in the church, but because of the example given to them by their parents. And of course it makes sense. And so this episode of Among Women is a beautiful one because it has a pretty long reflection at the beginning by Pat, where she's reflecting on her marriage and the place of faith in sustaining it. I think they celebrated 32 years married this week. Mm. Or last week, rather. But anyway, it's a great show because not only does she have this beautiful reflection at the beginning, but then the second part of it is with a book. It's with the author of the book, The Little Oratory. Have you guys seen that? Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful little book by, I think it's Lila Marie Lawler. Mm-hmm. She's the interviewed guest on the episode. Anyway, it's a beautiful book for prayer and how to integrate prayer in the family and how to pray together. And so it's a fantastic combination. And that's where the vocations are going to come from. And not just the vocations to the priesthood or religious, but, you know, how to one day marry well sacramentally and or live a consecrated life or live whatever the vocation is that God calls you to. So anyway, it's beautiful.
Excellent. Thanks, Maria. We'll have the link to that in the show notes. Our guest, special guest, Jeff Young, would you like to go with your pick of the week?
Certainly. Just this past week, I received in the mail a new book. And I think that you may have already chosen this as a pick of a past week, not W-E-A-K. and it's Lisa Hendy's new book, which is all about the grace of yes. That's right. So I received that in the mail. I have just skimmed through it. I'm very excited to get into it, and hopefully that is something that will be what I do this week. Great message, wonderful lady, and very excited to read that.
Excellent.
Hey, pop quiz. Do you know the fish's name?
No. What was the result of the contest?
Do you know, Jeff?
Nope.
I know.
No, but I know what I wanted to name. I didn't participate, but I know that I wanted to name it Fred Finley.
And oh, nice.
Fred with a PH, right?
Nice.
I missed it by that much.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was going for Myron.
Well, what is the official name?
Fiat. I mean, that was a no-brainer.
The car?
Yes.
The car. Fiat the fish.
What was Don Knotts' character's name in that movie where he was a fish?
Oh. I love that movie.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
Mr. Limpet?
Yeah.
That's like flashbacks to 8th grade watching that movie in the summer theater.
Mr. Limpet and Lady Fish. I love that movie.
Steve, do you have a pick for us this morning?
I do, actually. I came up with one while we were speaking. Mm-hmm. Usually I'm a little more prepared.
But this is the pick of the week, W-E-A. Go ahead.
I think I've spoken before about the cause for sainthood for Father Stanley Rother. If you're not familiar with him, he was an Oklahoma priest who was a missionary to Guatemala, and he was murdered during the Civil War down there. And there's been a cause for his sainthood that's been in progress for a few years now. And I recently read a letter that Archbishop Coakley of Oklahoma City posted, where he had gone to Rome to present the summary of his cause to the Congregation for Saints. And we recently received word that his cause for martyrdom has been forwarded to the next step. So that's good news for us, because if Father Rother is declared a martyr, he would be the first American-born martyr.
Mm.
And so not only would that be great for the whole country, but it would be especially meaningful here in Oklahoma, where we're such a small percentage of the Christian population, only about 3%, 3 or 4%. And so it's really been on my heart that this moves forward, because I'd like to see it happen, because I've been to Guatemala. I've been to in the room where he was murdered. I've talked to people who knew him, and it's close to my heart that I think he was truly a martyr, and I hope it gets declared that way. Nice. So that's my pick of the week.
Excellent pick. Thank you, Steve. Let's see, Sarah.
Well, I kind of have like a pick and a half ish. It's Learn How to Homebrew Day. So obviously being me, I'm pretty excited about that. Except instead of brewing today, I'm being the Catholic foodie by making chili and some Brazilian cheese rolls and all this stuff. So I'm putting my Jeff hat on today.
All right.
But on top of that, you should buy Jeff's book because it's awesome. And you can get your first small batch beer recipe from me in his awesome book.
That's right.
So, yeah, that's a great pick. And that was going to be one of mine, but that's okay. I'll continue with, of course, it was obvious, wasn't it? You know, we had Jeff on to talk about his new book, and you know, notwithstanding the fact that Sarah's recipe is in there, it's an excellent book buy, I'd say. So check it out. Also, I'd like to mention, so that was a little dig at Sarah. She didn't even respond. Oh well. saints.sqpn.com. You can, that's it. Head over there and you can find out all kinds of information about patron saints and et cetera. Put on by Terry Jones over there. Great website, a great resource for learning about the saints. And if you're thinking about maybe, you know, having a name or a saint, and you want to use a tool to help you pick a saint, you can always use Jennifer Fulweiler's Saints Name Generator, and we'll have that in the show notes, jenniferfulweiler.com/saints, and you can click the button, and it'll choose a saint for you if you're not sure what saint to maybe have help pray for you in this coming year. So,
yeah, you know, since we're getting to the end of the year, maybe you could pick a new patron for the following year.
Yeah.
That's what I did for this year.
Yeah, well, who did you pick again?
I picked
for you?
Well, if one I would have picked if I had just picked one myself, but it's St. Sebastian.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, so anyway, so it's fun to use. Just head over there to Saints Name Generator. You can just do a Google search for Saints Name Generator or jenniferfulweiler.com/saints. All right, those are my picks of the week. And let's see, Father Corey, did you already do yours?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
And since we got the music coming, I'll be kind of quick about it. But my pick actually is, it's a Kickstarter. We're going on the beer theme. I'll share my my screen here so you can see it real quick. Right now I'm sharing. Here we go. It's called the U-Keg Pressurized Keg Growler. And basically, it's got a little CO2 canister that you stick in the cap, and you fill the growler up with beer. And you can see it's, you know, stainless steel and brass, and you put it in the fridge and get it nice and cold and pressurized, and keeps your good craft beer nice and fresh and pressurized. So,
excellent.
Kind of a neat Kickstarter.
Yeah, that is. That kind of, you know, like when you get the growlers from the growler store, that's one of the bad things about it is as soon as you open it up, you got to drink it because exactly. It doesn't really keep. And this sounds like it'd be a perfect use for this kind of device.
You can see how it works, where the canister goes in the top there, and it's got a little adjusting to keep the carbonation. Then you just pour it like a keg.
You have growler stores?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do.
I don't think they're legal in Oklahoma.
Yeah, they weren't legal until recently here in Georgia. So Georgia's a big place for craft brewing all of a sudden. Anyway, we have 41 seconds left before we end the show. So Jeff Young, how do we find out more about you?
CatholicFoodie.com is the website. A lot of good things coming up the next couple of weeks as far as launch party type things go.
and also an appearance at the Daughters of St. Paul bookstore in Metairie, Louisiana, in New Orleans. So all the details are there. See you at CatholicFoodie.com.
Excellent. And to find out about all the rest of us here and our digital presence, head over to the show notes of CatholicWeekend.SQPN.com. Take care and God bless.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.